talk about decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, Moneycoin, Yourcoin, Blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
Understanding must arise during these times of unparalleled deceit. A view into the depths of society upon which this country has fallen. A storm brews upon the horizon. It's been said that those that have the eyes to see and the ears to hear will play a paramount role in the furthering of humanity and civilized society. But can civilized society and humanity survive the coming conflicts not seen since a dawn of time in ages bypassed? But you can find true forms of information and knowledge in abundance at revolution.radio, freedomsleps.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the globe. Stand upon the right side of history.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back to Revolution Radio, freedomsleps.com on this day, January 4th, 2023. That's 2023, and welcome back. How was your holidays, the new year? Did you celebrate with fireworks and a bottle of bubbly, or maybe a cold six-pack of domestic beer, or perhaps you went premium and had yourself some nice Guinness, or maybe you didn't drink at all, or maybe you went to bed real early and you woke up to a new year and didn't even think it was anything different than the year before because it was just only hours before. But who knows? One thing you did were able to count on, though, that Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, is still here. It's still here for you, the listener, the participants, the contributors, for whatever enjoyment you get out of it, out of a Studio A, Studio B, or even the Hawk's Nest. So we're glad you're back. I hope you're all safe and you stayed away from all the temptations to get yourself jabbed with some type of pharmaceutical that they're pushing along on the TVs and recordings and radio and even amongst the peer pressure of all your friends and neighbors that you may come across that tell you to wear a mask and or whatever else because they're so nosy. They're so nosy. They're still nosy. Going on three years later, they're nosy AF. Yes, AF. Figure that one out, right? Hey, but welcome back. Merry New Year to you. I've been out, well, I've been off air. Nobody's heard my voice on Revolution Radio since the last time I was on air. I've been pretty much just listening in, just like the rest of you, and just, I don't know, keeping my voice silent, my thoughts in my own head, and so on and so forth. But, you know, I'm personally just not too thrilled with all the current events. The stuff is just blockbuster confusing. You know, you hear all these multiple different stories, and they want you to cheer and jeer and all these other things, and I'm just so tired of it myself, and I know many of you are out there just as tired of it as I can even express myself. You know, today they got the whole Kevin McCarthy, you know, the vote for the Speaker of the House type of stuff going on, and, you know, the holdouts and the back and forth, and Donald Trump tweeting or making some type of commentary saying, you guys should just be blessed that you got, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but basically saying, you guys are so lucky to have Kevin McCarthy. Oh, you should just, you know, just vote for him and get it over with and move forward. Screw you, Donald Trump. But is this Donald Trump clone? Donald Trump double? Where is the real Donald Trump? Is this who we're hearing from? Is it the real Donald Trump? If it is the real Donald Trump, with all these little freaking, you know, dirt you got all around, you got us on our last nerve here, Donald. But I don't know. It could be his daughter and Jared that got freaking control over his, you know, platform. Who the frick knows? Because, you know, we do know they are Bolsheviks, them screwballs, you know. In any case, I'm just so tired of it myself, and many of you are, and I don't want to get into it. I've been listening to a lot of financial stuff, cryptocurrency, stock market, Great Reset. You know, I've been, you know, skipping around. I'm not sure how much I'm retaining myself because sometimes I'm just feeling just overwhelmed with all this stuff, and I'm just trying to dial it back. I'm trying to have more focus on myself and not so much of the outer world and all the gaslighting, all that crap that's going on. I'm trying to, whatever. So, you know, it says something any of us can do any time of the year. I don't do New Year's resolution. I believe if there's anything you could say, I got a New Year's resolution. So you could do it any time of the year, any time of day. You can choose to change yourself, whether what you're taking in, what you're putting out, what you want to do better, what you want to do less of, so on and so forth. And so, you know, if you do have a New Year's resolution, good for you. You got another 2 weeks to go before it's over. Right. But, Revolution Radio again, freedomslips.com. It's the place that you're at and you like to be, and this is our 12th year. That was our anniversary on the 1st of 2023, 12 years and running, and it only continues to do so with your help out there. So check out the website, contribute, participate wherever you can, how you can, so on and so forth. And it is greatly appreciated because that's what keeps the bandwidth flowing and the name of Revolution Radio out there and standing up with our cousins and sister stations, networks, rather, that are out there. And you guys all know who they are. So, again, we appreciate you. And we're going to kick into some stuff. It's going to be a variety of different things, some longer segments than others, but just some stuff that I picked up recently that I'm going to share with you. You know, nothing too special, but maybe it'll interest you, maybe it won't, but we shall see.
Ooh, big set.
The World Economic Forum dropped a major, major hint on January 2nd, 2023. First of all, my name is Coach JV. I am the top health, mindset, crypto, and business coach in the world. What you believe in your heart, you think in your mind, will eventually become your words and become your reality. If you can see it in your mind, eventually you can hold it right here in your hands. What you repeatedly do or see or get programmed becomes an unconscious activity. So we're going to dive right into this today. Family, I've been sharing a saying with you guys for a very, very long time. I used to work in the big banks as a vice president, went to CBA Executive Banking School, and I learned that in banks or big organizations, don't do what they say on the media, do what they actually do. So I'm sure many of you have heard me say that on my TikTok, on my YouTube. Well, on January 2nd, 2023, this article came out from the World Economic Forum, and it says this is what the future holds for cryptocurrency. At the exact same time, the media tells you cryptocurrency is a fraud. The FTX collapse, Celsius, last year was all about the collapse. First they resist it, okay? Then they regulate it. Excuse me, then they sue it, then they regulate it, then they join it. We are heading into the joining phase, and you're about to see the whole ecosystem from 2023 to 2025, the blockchain technology, distributed ledger technology, and the infrastructure is already built. Now you're going to start to see major banks become cryptocurrency custody banks. They can already custody your cryptocurrency. In 2020, Brian Brooks was the head legal counsel of Coinbase. He led the head legal counsel of Coinbase to become the head of the OCC, Operation of Currency Control, for a short time. And he allowed federally chartered thrifts banks to custody your crypto. So they can already custody your crypto. They already have the ecosystem built. Okay, so this came out on January 2nd, 2023. This is on the World Economic Forum site. This is what the future holds for crypto. So I'm going to talk about some highlights, and we're going to go down to this part right here that's highlighted. Okay. 2022 was a terrible year for cryptocurrencies with a loss of $2 trillion in market value. Of course, problem, reaction, solution. We could now see the handover of cryptocurrency technology, blockchain infrastructure to more regulated and established institutions. But I tell you guys, I've been telling you since 2020 that banks are going to custody your cryptocurrency. It's all part of the game. Okay. First they resist it, then they sue it. Then they regulate it, then they join it. Cryptocurrency and blockchain will continue to be an integral part of the modern economic toolkit. It is the only part to switch this monetary system. Okay? China, EU, and America are heading into a recession at the exact same time. This is the hero that's coming, which is cryptocurrency and blockchain. Okay? They're speaking the exact same language we've been saying on our channel, us as a family, since 2020. You should be very excited about this, guys. Regulation is going to be a good thing, okay? The reason why is it's going to bring massive amounts of institutional adoption in and the price appreciation. This is a very low market cap, okay? We need volume. You're not going to get away from regulation. You're not going to decentralize in the financial system. You're just not. Whoever controls the money controls the information, controls the people, okay? The only way to change the system is to be like Elon and become a billionaire and have the money to change the system, okay? So if we dive into this right here, I'm going to take a deep breath before I read this. I couldn't believe it when I read this. Well, I actually could, but I couldn't believe the World Economic Forum said this. So I'm going to read this paragraph, and then you're going to see the highlighted piece right here. Well, the underlying technology of cryptocurrency and blockchain is generalizable to all industries and coordinating activities collectively through block walls or building blocks of Web3. Experimentation at the core of financial institutions, among other sectors, continues unabated. So what they're saying right there, the World Economic Forum, remember Davos, they all come together. The wealthiest people in the world come together. They're saying, hey, don't worry about Celsius. Don't worry about FTX. Cryptocurrency, blockchain technology, distributed ledger technology, Web3 is moving forward unabated. You're just seeing the FUD. You're seeing us bringing in regulation. You're seeing us scaring the public, keeping them out of this disruptive technology, not really helping them understand which the core companies are as we move and which companies are with the World Economic Forum. Think about that, okay? Indeed, as a test of staying power of digital assets and blockchain at the core of the financial services. So they are here and other areas of the global economy. This part right here. Watch what the big banks and mature financial firms do, not what they say. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, have they been watching my – I've been saying that since 2020. Pat myself on the back. World Economic Forum is parodying what I'm saying. Watch what the big banks and mature financial institutions do or firms do, not what they say. That's how I've made all my investments the last 2 years in cryptocurrency, or since 2019. Watching what they do, not what they say. And it's changed my life and my investment thesis and completely changed my financial freedom. Okay, so let's dive into this. So let's talk about this. So they quote this article, not me. They put this article in there. And this is from 2019. They're giving you an example of JP Morgan. To not listen to what they say, but watch what they do. They put this article in there, not me. It says, in a world of cryptocurrency and economics of repertoire, calling the market failures and pouring out cold water on crypto, Jamie Dimon, chairman, CEO, may be public enemy number two. His well-known contrarian position on Bitcoin, where he famously said he would fire any of the JP Morgan employees who traded in cryptocurrencies, is now the subject of an about-face at the systematically important bank JP Morgan, along with other institutional investors, is now wading into cryptocurrency market, not with the safe bet of trading digital assets, as Fidelity is doing later this year, but in launching its own cryptocurrency. Cryptocurrency, the JPM coin, the battle for so-called stablecoin, countering the private volatility of free, floating, decentralized digital assets like Bitcoin, has now gained a very serious player. Guys, not heads gain. This is a very planned out, well thought out thing since Bitcoin's inception. Okay, so let's break this down. This is another thing. It says May 25th, 2022. It says how Web3 will level the playing field and unlock income equality. It's about bringing everybody into the financial system, guys. This year is all about climate change. You're going to see so many narratives around climate change in 2023, 2024, which are going to be the big black swans that are going to happen, which are going to shut down financial systems. It's going to shut down supply chain systems, and you're going to see blockchain technology be the saver. Okay, so let's go back to what they say. Watch what the big banks and mature financial services do, not what they say. Don't watch the YouTubers. Don't watch all these, you know, YouTubers saying they have all this inside information. World Economic Forum, the richest people in the world are telling you what's happening. Okay, who controls the system? Coach JV on a YouTube channel, or you know, a bunch of, or the World Economic Forum, the billionaires that are actually moving the markets. Okay, so here you go. Digital identity in Web3. Onyx, JPM, this is their own cryptocurrency. This is their own blockchain. Okay. Web3 demands a new way for us to interact with digital assets, protecting our identities across Web3 economy. JP Morgan already has their own cryptocurrency. I've showed you guys this video. This was on November 20th. Wells Fargo was already diving in 2017. This is an executive from Wells Fargo on our Thesis website. You can watch this stuff yourself, where she dives into digital assets, okay, around cryptocurrency. Wells Fargo is working with R3, okay? This is a document that I found from Bank of America Institute on May 2022. Web3, only the first inning. We provide an overview of emerging Web3 ecosystem as well as an update of the version
Check
of
it
a
out.
Redacted 141-page report published on October 4th, 2021. Key takeaways. Digital assets are the building blocks of Web3 and enable creators and internet to monetize their contributions. We expect Web3 applications to bring more monetary balance between dominant platforms, operators, and their users. Web3 ecosystem of application may provide the catalyst for the first billion digital asset users. Okay, let's go down here. They break it down. Okay, they break down all the things happening here. They show you right here. Exhibit 2, Web3 applications are exciting, but don't forget the bigger picture. Web3, exchanges and marketplaces, digital assets, blockchains, crypto cards, Oracle networks. Well, at the end, we're going to dive into the Oracle network and what it actually looks like. Web3, HSBC, it's time to level up. It's on every single one of their websites, okay? This is talking about Web3, blockchain technology, cryptocurrency. It is all connecting. You can't go into Web3 without changing to blockchain, on-demand liquidity, or cryptocurrency. Bam, it's all connected. You're seeing a disruptive technology come in. If we go back to 2021 and 2018, this was back in 2018. This is the largest bank in the world, guys. The largest bank in the world. Bank of China moves to patent blockchain scaling solutions. So if we go back here and read this statement, watch what the big banks and mature financial firms do, not what they say. This is why books like The Intelligent Investor are important. This is why I don't get flooded out of the market. This is why I know what I'm invested in. XRP, XLM, Algorand, QNT, HBAR, all the ones are on here. Think about this. Ethereum, okay? My major investments are diversified across the ecosystem of the new financial system and Web3. Intelligent investor, diversify across cryptocurrencies. So if you're in an investment, stocks, diversify. You're in crypto, diversify. You should diversify in and out of cryptocurrency. Warriors, the game has completely changed. But I want to go back to this one more time. I've been saying this for 2 years on my channel. What the big banks and mature financial services do, not what they say. This is the World Economic Forum parroting that. They're talking about their own brothers and sisters. They're giving you the hint. They're saying, hey, listen, they're telling you to look this way as there's a whole other narrative going on this way. That's what they just said. And I'm like, look at the ecosystem. Let's just soak this up for just a second. Look at this. My computer's over here just so you guys see. I have a big screen up here. Ethereum. I'm stacking Ethereum right now, guys. Dollar cost averaging Ethereum. HBAR, I'm dollar cost averaging. My bags are packed on XRP. My bags are packed on XLM. My bags are packed on Algorand. And I'm holding long term, guys. I don't give a shit if it moves tomorrow. I don't care about the bull market. Wealthy people are built in bear markets. Bear markets. You have to think long term wealth strategies, warriors, not short term. None of this short term stuff. People try to get rich in bull markets. They all get wrecked. Wealthy people get rich in bear markets. This is the greatest time in human history right now. 2023 will be one of the biggest opportunities to buy assets at a very, very, very low price. Intrinsic value company. So I hope this message reaches you well. I hope this warms your heart. I hope it excites you. Because many of you right now are on the edge of just bouncing and just saying, you know what? Screw it. No, this is your opportunity. This is your time. You worked your ass off. Hold on to those investments. Okay? That's why I share my story. And I don't care about haters and what people say. My story is so important to the ecosystem of what Americans or freedom can do. I was on my mom's couch 3.5 years ago, guys. I now have equity in 8 companies now. 3 are in profit. One went to over $1 million. We're going to have another one going over $1 million in the worst economic times in the world, family. Okay? I'm diversified in crypto. I'm diversified in leveraged life insurance. I'm into precious metals. I'm now getting into real estate when the market collapses on the back end of this year. I did it by turning away from all the bullshit, watching what they actually do, not what they say, reading the proper books and understanding how billionaires and multimillionaires work. And in 3.5 years, I completely changed my life. I paid off all worldly debt now. I have cash on the sidelines ready to buy more. And within the next 4 years, my whole family's financial picture will be completely different. It was by studying and focusing. As everybody looked this way, I looked this way. And so we've taught over 5,000 warriors how to do the exact same thing. It's all about your ecosystem, family. You can go down to www.3twarrioracademy.com. You can join the tribe. Get involved, guys. The private coaching program, which is going to be
JP Morgan Chase formed a joint venture for $1 billion, would it be, like Auntie Buffy, $1 billion to buy hundreds of homes across America and make them rental properties. At the same time, 18 million Americans between the ages of 26 and 41, moved back home with their parents, 39% of them citing they can't afford rent. So why is JP Morgan Chase buying up $1 billion worth of homes to rent out if folk can't afford rent? Now, I usually connect the dots and go ahead and tell y'all Auntie's theories. I want to know what y'all think. Comment below and then I'll respond.
A lot of it for me is about alignment. Like, you've been made a certain way. You're designed a certain way biologically. Mm-hmm. And so I find what a lot of people do is they just get in the way of their own biology. So, for example, they're misaligned in some area of their life, right? And so if your back is misaligned in some way, like let's say you have to go to the chiropractor because you're in pain, or maybe you have a pain in your foot, but actually it's in your back. When you get misaligned at any point in your life, in every domain of your life, you're going to suffer at some point. It may show up somewhere different, just like the pain might show up in your, let's say, your lower calf instead of your lower back. But that misalignment costs us dearly. And I just think a lot of people are misaligned because they just haven't figured out how to just simply agree with their body, with their psychology. And I think when you agree with it and you agree with all those different domains in your life, then everything just goes better. It's like it's very difficult to run when you're in pain, right? Difficult. Like if you have a problem with your spinal cord and you have to go see a chiropractor and they just haven't quite found the answer, very difficult to run when you've got a pain in your back.
Yeah, like almost impossible. You know what? You know, it's funny. It's like even in Ironman, so one of the things I really do is take care of my body, right? So during the full Ironman, you know, it could be 14, 15, a bad one, 16 hours of cardio. And all those is I'm really paying attention to not chafing. I've literally ripped open a testicle by, you know, I'm gonna push through this 2 miles before the finish line. And I stuffed ice and just so it would freeze and the bleeding would stop and you know, so I could get through to the end. But I wasn't gonna stop after, you know, going that far. But now it's like I'm hypersensitive about making sure that I'm taking care of myself completely. Yes, I'm in a ultimate endurance thing. Yes, I'm going to have 3 days to recover from this. My whole body's going to be inflamed with like a fever and fever blisters and everything. And I know I'm going to be in pain, but I make sure to take care of the vehicle that's getting me to the finish line. That wasn't what I did in the early days of Ironmans, where obviously I ripped open a testicle. I have like all kinds of stuff that would happen. My toes would be bleeding. My nipples would be bleeding, both of them while I'm coming across the finish line. Now I tape them and I'm like wax and all kinds of stuff. The stuff that you see the older guys do in the, you know, and that you run into and you go, oh yeah, it's like, he's really taking care of himself, you know, like, boy, just got to muscle through it. Now it's like I'm one of the, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should have listened to them the first time.
Yeah. Well, everybody has reservoirs of performance that have not been tapped into.
Oh, for sure.
Right, so you have a next level. Whatever that is, whether it's in life or in business or in the different domains of your life, you have next levels and you have reservoirs of performance that just haven't been tapped into yet. And so one of the things that I do is I uncover those areas, but we all have them, right? You can do something better in your life. You can be more focused. You can be more disciplined. You can go to the next level.
Yeah, you'd be shocked. If you had to, you could get out and you could run 30 miles right now, but your mind's going to tell you that you can't.
Yep.
And when you get past 6 miles, 7 miles, your mind is going to tell you, but your body functionally will take you the whole distance, especially once you get into the, you know, regulating your heart rate, regulating your nutrition, you know, what you've got to eat to keep that going. You learn where your zones are with your heart. And then you go, I could do this forever. Like when I finished the Sacramento Ironman, I was like, if I had to, I could probably go another 10 miles, maybe another 20 miles, you know. And part of the reason I did Ironman is because I thought I couldn't do it. And I thought, well, I don't want to have a thought that I can't do something, so I'm just going to do it, right? And when I pushed myself through it and listened to my thoughts but didn't engage with them, like there's all kinds of conversations that go on in that 14-hour, 15-hour trip.
All that self-talk.
And there's a lot of stuff. We had 35-mile-an-hour gust winds and crosswinds at 25 that were coming and the gusts at 35. And there were people that were getting taken away in ambulances. I saw people riding their bike. They're, like, bleeding all down. They weren't giving up. And you're just like, yeah, what you think you can do, what you can actually do is so much more. And I see that with people.
Yeah.
What you can do is unbelievable.
Yeah.
What people do is depressing.
Yeah.
Right?
So
where they give up on themselves and you're going, I know you got so much more in you.
Yeah.
You know?
So what you think about yourself is 10 times more important than what anybody else thinks about you. Think about that. What you think about yourself is 10 times more important than what anybody else thinks about you. If you verbalize that negative thought, you give it 10 times the power again. So now you have 100 times the power. One negative comment or negative thought that you verbalize has 100 times the power of a positive one. If you tell somebody else your negative thought about yourself, you've given it another 10 times the power. So a negative thought is 10,000 times the power of a positive one. So what you believe about yourself is at the core of all performance. And so what we try and do is we try and raise people's self-belief. So self-belief and confidence are very different. A lot of people just use them interchangeably. They're not the same. Okay, so belief is your ability to convince yourself that you can achieve a certain outcome, right? Do you believe that you can do this? So in my some of my work with the Seattle Mariners, Andy McKay is the mental performance coach there. The number one and first thing they teach is, do you believe that if you listen to us, we can make you a better hitter or a better baseball player? Think about that. The very first thing is belief. So if they get a player, and I don't know if anybody can see me on the podcast here, but if you get a bottle and the bottle represents your belief, if your belief at the 10 is at the top and the bottom is a 0, and your self-belief is a 5, no matter what the Seattle Mariners pour into you, they can have world-class training, world-class teaching, but you're going to leak at a 5 because there's going to be a hole at 5. So it's not going to matter what anybody teaches you. You're stuck in your own self-belief or lack thereof. So the idea of raising a person's self-belief is crucial because you had to believe that you could do it. Now, I don't know what kind of gymnastics, mental, psychological.
Oh, no,
gymnastics.
I didn't believe I could do it.
Okay, right.
I absolutely did not believe I could do it.
Okay.
I thought I was going to die.
Yep. So at some point, you started to believe in yourself at some point. But then you began to build confidence. So once you began to prove things to yourself, you actually began to build self-confidence. So belief is usually first, not always, but usually
I guess
first.
I didn't wait till I had to believe.
Okay.
I didn't wait till I had to believe. My thing is, for example, I talked a lot to entrepreneurs. I've started 32 companies. If I believed those companies were going to succeed, I mean, I did the best. You know, it's like I just do it.
Right.
Just like with the Ironman. I just did it. The conversations were all there. The thoughts were all there. I just listened to them and said, thank you for sharing. Right. Thank you for sharing. I own my mind. My mind doesn't own me. My mind doesn't tell me what I'm going to do. I tell my mind what it's going to do. I take cold plunges. I take ice baths. And I put it, and I'm like...
It's great mental discipline.
Yeah, and part of that is not only do I... When I go in, now I don't even allow myself the space to say it's cold. My space is, this is the most refreshing,
yes,
exciting, exhilarating, and going to be healing process that I'm going to do. Yep. I get in it and I love it. I'm like there the first minute, my body is freaking out and I can hear my entire, all my cells going,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And then my mind's like, we got to get out. And I'm like, but I tell it. It's like you, because I own my body.
Yep.
I own my mind. Mm-hmm. I own my emotions and I'm the one that's going to, I'll use them. Mm-hmm. My emotions are great. They're a great thing to...
They're indicators.
Indicate, right? Mm-hmm. My thoughts are, thank you, brain. I mean, it eats everything. It's eating everything that you guys are saying and the mic's saying. Like, it eats everything. Thank you. But I'm the filter.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So, I mean, that's kind of how I look at it. That's a lot about what I talk about in my book, is that just transcendent, I'm above all those things, and I listen to them, but mm-hmm. they don't own me. I own them. I don't know if that's...
I think most people are a slave to their thoughts, and they don't think they have any control over their thoughts. And it's just not true. You do have control over your thoughts. It's a skill. It's a discipline. You have to learn how to think for performance.
Well, here's the problem with that. People that think they are their mind, right? Mm-hmm. When that is even a question of challenge, what happens is the mind fights for survival. Because what we're talking about is the idea that you know, it challenges the mind, which has the control. If you think you are your emotions, then your emotions will control you.
That's therefore right.
If you feel something, it's real.
Yep.
Even though it might not be real at all.
That's right.
Right?
Yep.
So if it's not an indicator, then your emotions will control your life. And if you can't distinguish the two, then you're emotionally controlled by your life. Mm-hmm. And your life is going to be dictated by your emotions. And there's lots of people. And I have tremendous compassion for people that have... Literally, their emotions are bigger than who they are, bigger than their mind.
Yep.
You know, and people get stuck there.
Yep.
They get stuck in their emotions. They get stuck in their minds. And it's not like I'm immune to it. I was too. My mind fought like hell. It was a serious battle between the, you know, because the self that I am is pretty quiet. Mm-hmm. It's neutral. Mm-hmm. It's very quiet. It's like that Buddhist nothing. There's nothing. The thing that runs all this stuff is nothing.
Yeah.
It's that, that emptiness behind it, and it, that handles everything else. So I listen to the conversations, and I invite my mind to give me suggestions, but by far, I'm not going to allow it to run me.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Fascinating.
Do I sound a little crazy?
Well,
I'm not going to be locked up when I get out of here.
Someone once told me that you can't keep a bird from landing on your head, but you can keep it from building a nest there. And that's what I think thoughts are like. You can have a thought that comes to you, and you're just like, oh, where did that come from? I can't control that. However, you can stop it from building a nest there.
Right.
And in terms of, let's say, for example, in professional baseball, there's probably an average of about 17 seconds between pitches. And if we can control what a baseball player thinks about in those 17 seconds, they don't have a chance to be negative. They don't have a chance to let all that negativity come in their mind, because we know that negativity really works. 100%.
Right.
We know that it works. The positivity we know that works as well, or at least being...
Well, there's a lot of science behind this as well. I mean, neurons that fire together stay together, mm-hmm. and those strong connections build solid connections. And, you know, when you talk about pattern interrupting, I mean, if you're continuously having the same thought, then you're building a nest. And those neurons are firing together. And what's interesting is those neurons find other, like, collaborative ideas to actually connect to those neurons.
Yep.
So they build a stream that when you have a thought, you go down like you ever notice that there's a stream of thought that always seems kind of like when you have this thought, you have the next thought that, and you have a whole chain of thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
Those are those neurons and that network firing together that you just set it off. Like, I've always wondered, if you could give me your list of words that are buttons to you, mm-hmm. so that I can just avoid those, so that I can actually talk to you, rather than your that fight that happens when you touch those words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a really valuable, really important to teach yourself how to think. It's not necessarily what to think, it's how to think. And you can teach yourself how to think for performance.
Yeah, the biggest, the one that really got me was Martin Heidegger.
Mm-hmm.
He's written about being in the domain of being, which I don't know that anybody else has, but he's one of the best philosophers that I've come across that really gets into that. There's a book called On the Way to Thinking, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. It really busts apart like thought, you know? But yeah, he's got some incredible stuff.
Well, a lot of this performance stuff and being successful, I think, starts with your ability to identify yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people want to set goals, New Year's resolutions, and that kind of thing. But who you are and who you want to be is a far more important question to answer than what do you want to do in 2023. So it's actually an identity issue. In fact, habits and discipline, in my view, is an identity issue. Who do you want to be? So, for example, when COVID hit and I was working out at the gym at 4:15 every morning, I get up at 3:45 every morning. I'm just that wired that way. And mm-hmm. that's my time that I could have just privately, you know, by myself and try and get into flow state. And so... So when the gyms closed down, I was like, well, now what am I going to do? It's like, you know, in Seattle, it's January. It's not very cold. It, like, I'm Canadian, right? So it's like I'm used to, like, really cold. But so this wasn't that bad. So
Cold.
Not like that.
Yeah, it's not really cold.
So I'm like, well, what am I going to do? So it's like, well, who do I want to be? Do I want to be the kind of guy? So it's an identity issue. Do I want to be the kind of person that it has to be a certain temperature
right.
before I go out and do whatever I'm going to do? Does it have to not be raining? Or per square foot, does it have to be a certain amount of raindrops? Who do I want to be is, I think, the primary question. And if I can answer that question, if I want to be like, well, no, that sounds kind of stupid. If I'm the kind of person that if it's 2 degrees cooler, I'm not going to go out and do my thing. So I think that identity issue really leads into the conversation about habits and discipline, but it's who do you want to be? And I think that's the first question to answer.
So what are the techniques that you're going to use? Like, for my guys, like I make them play basketball. We beat the shit out of each other. I get on them. There's these big group calls when guys make excuses. We hold each other fucking accountable. Like, there's very actionable steps. One of the things in my program is every 15 minutes you have to leave with an actionable step, and every one of my modules has some actionable step. I want to become this dude who is just not so frail. I'm not so anti-fragile that I don't want to go outside because it's 68 degrees instead of 70. What are the actionable steps, by the way. Which one?
Anti-fragile.
Anti-fragile. Terrific, yeah.
Yeah.
What are some of the actionable steps that I take to in order to become that type of a person?
Well, you have to understand something called progress theory. So progress theory is that idea that you just get a little bit better every day. I don't understand. Like I'm the 1% better. Okay, whatever. But again, the brain doesn't know the difference between 1 inch and 1 mile. Mm-hmm. So once you start to build the confidence that you can do something and your brain is like, I'm heading in the right direction, let's just keep going. You always have to prove it to yourself. So you have to show that progress. So for example, you know, I live on a really tall hill in Seattle and I go up and down this hill. It's pretty brutal, but I'm going up that hill. And at the beginning of COVID, I said, well, you know, I'm just going to do 10 pushups. And then the next day I was like, I'm going to do 11. Well, I can do 11. Of course I can do 11, but I could probably do 20, but I'll just stick with 11. The next day I did 12. The next day I did 13. I only on purpose did one at a time. And because I did that, I was up to 330 pushups by the end of it. And you just don't think you can do it, but you can. And so you get so good at something because of the confidence that you're building, because you're constantly proving it to yourself. Yeah. You just have to buy into progress theory and you have to be consistent. So I have this thing that I call kind of a propensity for action. And so guys have to take action. So when you talk about, like, what are you going to do about this? How are you going to execute this? What's going to be your response to this? You got to put something into action. You can't just think you know it. Like, that's what people do all the time. They think they know something, but in reality, they don't understand what the word know means,
yeah.
Right? So know means to experience something. So in biblical times, they talked mm-hmm. about knowing someone is intimately sexually involved with them, right? So you have to understand that experience in what we're talking about is you have to be able to execute something. So we, you know, I call it Oprah Winfreyism. It's like, well, we can talk about something all day long and then think we know it. No, we actually don't know it. You have to go execute it. So
I get frustrated with that. With, you know, I'm in the YouTube ecosystem, right? Having started 32 companies in 17 industries, been a multimillionaire 4 times, been homeless once, suicidal once, almost took my life in 2000. And, you know, I lost $63 million in 2008, went $12.8 million in debt, and just showed up to work every single day. So for me, I think it's you just do it.
Yeah.
You just do it.
Yeah.
Is kind of the thing. You just
default to action.
You default to action. Absolutely. And massive action.
Yeah. And you'll course correct along the way. That's the thing.
Sure.
Like we have a.
Hey, hold on. Wait, what we're saying, hold on. I'm holding up this oxygenated water that is not flammable. Michelle, real quick.
Yeah.
Just good. Shout out one more time. Tell us about the business.
Oxydrate is the name of the product. Oxydrate.
Can you talk about Blockquake? What is it that you guys do? I've interviewed, I believe, both of you before.
Yep.
Can you guys describe Blockquake?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, we're a fintech company. We're looking to launch our own crypto exchange shortly, and that's tip of the iceberg. We want to get into other things, including banking, NFT marketplace, derivatives platform, but just focused on raising some final capital, getting the crypto exchange launched. Obviously, there's been a lot of shit in the news, and we've been talking about this stuff for 2 years that this stuff was going to happen, and we were already pre-planned.
The crash is going to happen.
Yeah, the FTX bullshit, all of that stuff.
For sure.
We were always planning that you have to have risk management in place. So ever since it happened, we've been having better conversations with people around bringing something out that actually takes care of customers.
Can I make an observation coming from traditional finance, right?
Yeah,
so you guys, you know, I'm an options trader. Yeah. Tom Sosnoff, the great Tom Sosnoff, was the guy who taught me how to trade. And I work for a small fund right now. I work for Continental Financial Capital as an analyst. One of the things I'll tell you guys is that the audience that was initially bringing crypto to us was not doing you any favors because they had neck tattoos and 2 felonies. And a rented Lambo and a fucking 30-second ad on Facebook with a fake paddock. And they were telling the crypto bros and the Lamborghini index.
The whole Wen Moon crowd.
You understand. Yeah, you understand.
For sure.
But like that was the loudest crowd. And when you talk to people. And then the other thing, the other part was the burnout kid who comes home for Thanksgiving. And he's like, mom, you guys got to get into Bitcoin. And mom and dad are like, shut the fuck up. What are you talking about? This is nonsense. And then they come back the next week and they're like decamillionaires. And then people weren't like, oh, they're decamillionaires. Let me get into Bitcoin. They're like decamillionaires. This has got to be a scam. My burnout cousin is a millionaire. It's got to be. I'm just telling you, this is from the standard. The reason why I bring this up is because I went to a hedge fund conference in New York, sitting there in my suit and tie, walking around, talking to all these other hedge funds. This guy comes up and he is the one of the the head of the fund manager for the government employees of Illinois. Mm-hmm. And he had this guy had $40 billion, something like that.
It's November food
and
prices.
There was the beginning of the crash when we dropped down from 60 and got down all the way down to like Bitcoin was down to like 20K.
Yep.
And it was when it first happened. And this guy got up there and wiped his ass with fucking Bitcoin. He just sit there and just, that it was just for criminals. And how did you not see this coming? And I was like, bitch, you weren't saying this a couple months ago. You're a liar. You're a fool. Like, and that's the thing. I just think that the thing you guys that I think this whole space has to understand is the perception of the space. It's like white collar criminals versus the blue collar criminals. Do you understand what I'm saying? And then when the thing happens with FTX, I think it hurts everyone.
Yeah.
I don't think it just hurts Sam Bankman-Fried. I think it hurts everyone when stuff like this happens. You see CoffeeZilla and you see my man Spencer Cornelia. They'll go off in depth and then they'll talk about all these things that are happening. And now Logan Paul's got a scam that he's running. And then the next huge YouTuber has a scam that he's running, right? And yeah. these horrible things. And to be honest with you, do you think Tom Brady knew fuck all about FTX? Yeah. Of course he didn't. Then he was having the worst time of his life. Of course he didn't know what was going on. Yeah. Do you think Steph Curry is out there worrying about, oh man, you know, I hope the bid ask spread on my FTX. Like, do you think he gave a fuck about that? Man, are they fully capitalized? I'm not really sure. Was Tether a scam? Like, do you think that's what? No, of course he's out there jacking up threes. And then, so the problem that was happening is that, like I believe, is that there's a perception issue, and that perception issue is going to maintain for a while until personally think, until we get to a point where every coin I hear about is like, this coin is different because there's a utilization of it that's different from every other coin, and it's not different. It's the girl who says, I don't fuck on the first date, who just fucked the male stripper on the first date. It's like but I'm different. I'm not like the other girls. No, you're just like the other girls. When the market crashed back during the corona crash, when the stock market crashed, what happened to Bitcoin? Did it go up? Was it a flight to safety? Was it a flight to quality? No, it went down just like the stock market did. And so there was these things that we were promised, and those things didn't come through. And then FTX happens. And do you understand? I'm speaking from the old. Obviously, I'm not the old curmudgeon-y guys, but I was taught by fucking hardcore pit traders from the OEX back in Chicago. These are the guys who taught me how to trade. And when I listen to what they say, this is their problem with this whole space. Do you guys understand what I'm saying?
This is the thing
you have to address. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, I come from a similar background. Yeah. I used to do risk management and AML work in financial services. Mm-hmm. So, I hear it from people all the time, too, because of this happening. They can't disassociate a crypto from the people doing the scam. So, like, unfortunately, those are tough conversations we do have to have.
Yeah, of course,
right now. And for better or for worse, things like this need to happen. Let's clean out all the bad actors and like any other market, right, that's brand new. You've got the bad actors that are actually there first.
You know, when I drive a Tesla, I don't give a fuck what the stock price is because the car is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand? Yep. There's a utility out. Like, if you're a shareholder of the Green Bay Packers and they win the Super Bowl, do you give a fuck what the stock price is? No. It's the same thing. Like, if you have an iPhone, do you care what the stock price of Apple is? You don't care because there's a product additionally that you can get behind and you can follow. And a lot of times with crypto, what I was supposed to understand is that the NFT was then going to be the thing that was going to save it, and it was going to be – and it didn't – the problem is these things are great ideas. I do think blockchain technology will change the world. I think that's unassailable. The problem is there were so many promises along the way, and none of them were kept. And so many people ran away with the money. And, oh, my God, man, I was just, listening to Lana Rhodes just sit there and complain wholeheartedly about how porn ruined her life. Shout out to the AVN this week. And then start her own crypto, start her own NFT, and then run away with the money when people started being mean to her on social media. And this, guys, these are your peers, regardless of what you think or how shitty she is. These are the peers that you have to deal with in this space. And it makes it so difficult. For me, as somebody who is, I'm bullish on crypto. This is – I'm very I sit there and I look at, man, what in the world is going on when you see this kind of stuff? Anybody can do this. Like, there's no governing body that can just say, hey, Logan, you can't do that. You can't just say this shit that you're saying.
Well, there is, and I think that the people that do perpetrate these scams definitely will be held accountable. It's just the government moves slow, and it's going to take a while.
Yeah.
Because they're definitely going after people that were doing stuff years ago. They just take a long time, and we're in the final stages of getting our New York State Bit License, and that's one of the toughest, most rigorous scrutiny that you have to go under.
For sure, yeah.
And we're very close to getting that. And Antonio and the team, they have a background in financial services and risk management and compliance and audit. So I think that does set us apart from some of these other people. And you have to separate the technology and what Bitcoin and blockchain can do versus the people that are doing these bad things. Because if it wasn't that, it could be something else. You know, unemployment is generally good, but how many people were scamming EDD when that was like happening? You know, they're in California, they sent out billions of dollars to people in prisons in other states. You know, so that's one of those things that there's always going to be bad actors. We're just doing our best to have a compliant exchange, and we're going to have a top 4 auditing firm auditing all of our records and making sure that the funds are in the accounts.
Yeah.
And that's going to be public.
Yeah, that's actually one thing that we've been pointing out to a lot of people, that none of the crypto exchanges right now, not even the big name ones, none of them actually want to have a independent audit done if customer funds are there, because they're not there.
Mm.
Every single big name exchange that has been out on Twitter saying, don't worry, guys, your funds are there, it's not there.
Yeah. Wow, okay. Wow, that's a pretty big revelation, yeah. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Another thing that I saw was exchanges that were already registered with the SEC and large crypto exchanges buying those exchanges and then grandfathering those credentials.
Yep.
Does that make sense? I'm trying to think. Nadex did one, and I can't remember.
They're basically buying the license.
Correct, exactly right. I know, because Tom Sosnoff, the guy who I work for, he has an exchange and he sold it to a crypto exchange. That's exactly why he had to sell it to them. So it's almost like SPACs.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Without me actually doing an IPO, I'm going to IPO through someone else.
Or like liquor licenses with bars.
Sure, for sure.
Yeah.
This is a really interesting concept. Okay, cool. What is it now? The thing that makes you guys different, you say you do have customer funds on hand?
We will. So we're not launched yet. We're going through our final raise to get this launched. But we're, as Chad mentioned, we're going to be hiring one of the top 10 global audit firms. And they will actually – we're never going to borrow customer funds, lend it out, et cetera, and we'll actually prove it by having one of the big firms come in, give them direct access to all of our data sources. They can pull their own reports, do their own independent verification. None of that stuff's happening in the industry right now.
Another thing that sets us apart is we will never be trading against customer funds.
Okay, also. So front-running, yeah.
Yeah.
Really good point. Yeah, because we're working with the top market makers instead of making markets.
Got it.
Right. So that then, you know, that's how we protect the customer on that side too.
Nice. Yeah, we've seen all this stuff that's happening, and this is from the very early days of. I was one of the first advisors that came on years ago, and from the very early days, we laid out all the problems in crypto, all the things that we think would solve it, and then fit that into what the actual regulatory compliance landscape will look like. And just been building that brick by brick.
Yeah. I mean, you've known us for a couple of years. Like prior to the blow-ups recently, we've been having these conversations last 2-3 years. Obviously, it's not the sexy topic, so no one wanted to hear about it. But, you know, now everyone's talking about it.
Mm-hmm. So what do you guys think that government regulation is going to do, and how is that going to impact the industry and your business in particular?
Yeah. I know you and I were talking earlier today about that, where I hope to take a measured approach where let it be focused on customer protection, don't overreach, because that's really what it should be about. Like put common sense rules in place that protect the customer. I think for us to get there, though, the companies in the space need to lead. You know, I think we'll be one of them that lead the way. We'll start with best practices that make sense, and hopefully, you know, that gives some guidance to regulators. We talked earlier about you know, you said Warren earlier, and then there's Toomey as well. So there are elected officials. So we want people to know there are elected officials that are reasonable, that love the space. They are they're cheerleaders and fans of this, and they want us to get there. But
they barely know the language.
Yeah.
Well, barely understand the concepts.
There's some – but I have a friend in Congress, Warren Davidson, and he's from the 8th District of Ohio. And I met him at Consensus, the big conference. This was in New York a few years ago. And he understands it. He speaks at panels and different conferences, and he has a good understanding of everything that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think part of it too is we in the industry, we need to, you know, we need to call out what doesn't work either, right? You know, just can't be blind cheerleaders to everything. And, you know, that's what we try to do. Like, hey, this is going to work, this isn't, and just be transparent with people.
Well, I think there's a trust issue, right? Prices
showed a 10.6% increase over last year. And because of things like drought, supply chain shortages, and overall inflation next year, you could see these prices pop even more. It's getting expensive to go grocery shopping. Good time to bring in Stephanie Nash. She's a dairy farmer in Tennessee. She joins us now. Stephanie, good morning to you. Do you see food prices going down anytime soon?
No, we're not going to see any change in the U.S. market for food prices for Americans. You know, we imported 57% more from Brazil for beef, 12% more in Mexico. I'm telling the government and our politicians and our leaders, what are you doing? What are you doing with American grown? How are you supporting our family farmers and ranchers? And how are you supporting Americans at the grocery store? They're paying anywhere from 10 to 18% more for products. And we need to fix that. We need to fix the way American runs and how we support our family farmers and ranchers.
You know, for people who don't understand how farming works, they're probably thinking, well, farmers are getting such high prices for their goods, they must be making out like bandits.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, I guess, we're not getting communication to the public, right? You know, you have JBS, Cargill, right. Tyson. They're making marginal record profits this year off family farmers and ranchers while we see Texas beef selling record numbers because they have no water. And you're seeing California dairy farms sell off because they can't afford feed. And it's just crazy. I think the USDA needs to do a better job of implementing programs to feed Americans, to support American grown, and just be stronger. You know, you look at the markets, you look at imports and exports. We continue to support other countries, and we're not even supporting the American people.
You talk about shortages, a real possibility next year. How bad could it be?
You look at Ukraine, you look at Russia, you look at what's going on in the Netherlands. I think there's going to be a lot of food shortages next year. You know, Americans go to the grocery store with confidence. They can get the food that they need. And I think we take for granted what farmers and ranchers do around this country. We take for granted the products that we produce, the products that we produce here in America. And we need to rely on that. We need to protect our rural communities and look for a future that's stronger in our security.
100%. We'll be right back in 2 and 2. This day, January 4th, 2023, we will get into Great Reset Talk in the next segment. Be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
You're going back in?
There's still men out there. I go home. People ask me, hey, Hoot, why do you do it, man? Why? Some kind of war junkie? I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. That's it. That's all it is.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Number one listener supported radio. The printing press for freedom at a time when freedom is needed the most.
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number three is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne. And I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in Defense Condition 1. As we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in, and I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for the unequivocal truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
The original machine had a base plate of pre-famulated amulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two swerving bearings were in a direct line with a panometric fan. The lineup consisted simply of six hydrocoptic Marzal vanes, so fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal lotus o deltoid type, placed in panendermic semi-boloid slots of the stator, every seventh conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the up end of the grand meters.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, taking the confusion out of transmutated lunar girdle springs for 4 years and running. Revolution Radio, the number one listener-supported alternative medium radio on the planet.
All right. Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, that was a bust. I had a nice intro there, but thanks, Skype. Welcome back to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com on this day, January 4th, 2023. Hope you're all enjoying your day. Here in the Midwest, it's been semi-miserable weather. Yesterday, we had a hailstorm. Can you believe it? It was kind of chilly.
Well, that was a bust.
All right. See, there it is. Yeah. Green. Share screen. I had it going. Skype is such a flawed product. But in any case, gee whiz, now I'm all messed up. Man, it's such a great intro, too. Anyway, welcome back, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Yeah, you guys know it. You guys love it. Enjoying a bunch of shows when they are airing. You know, we have a lot of open slots, which is unfortunately causes some dead air on this network, and it's unfortunate. You know, sometimes we're looking forward to listening to a particular show and, gee, they're just not there. No warning, no whatever. Now we understand things come up, but, you know, hopefully they could get a guest host or, you know, someone to maybe mirror the network or from Studio B or something like that. So I've not been here all the time, but at least I've tried to have coverage for this slot one way or another. But I'm glad to be back for this time period before the in our winter months and so forth, and be with you and share what I have, which may not be such great stuff. I like to get back to the old shows that this show actually started off with in the first couple years. But here we are. The network appreciates you. I appreciate you. Good to interact with you guys here and there. Don't forget to check out the chat room. You know, that's on the website at freedomslips.com, where a lot of conversations are going on, complimenting the shows, disagreeing with the shows or segments that are being played, and or bringing up other such topics that they come across and want to share with the rest of you. But in any case, I have some clips coming up with Jay Dyer and some others talking about the Great Reset. They had I caught a good show today where it was actually an excellent panel. So hopefully I can get the share screen to cooperate this time. And that's for all you out there that aren't aware. I am on Skype. I'm now broadcasting my voice. But if I want to share audio or video or any sort, there's a feature called share screen, and you share it. And sometimes it doesn't matter. You got it on. It just doesn't kick in. So I have a OCD thing where I actually share screen and then I stop sharing. Then I'll redo it again and share screen, and often that doesn't. And I actually did that a couple times to make sure it would kick in, because often when you share it, it's not there. So what I've done OCD like, because it's done that so often to so many, that I'll share it and then I'll stop sharing and then I'll share it again. And generally 9.8% of the time it works, but it didn't that time. Can you go figure? All right, let's kick it with this.
Carrying on your shoulder, we have bent over backwards, we have done backflips to make you feel equal, and yet we've done everything. Perfect example is in the federal government. If you and I get the exact same rating for a position, do you know what? You get it. And do you know why? Because you're black. Is that fair? Is that fair to me?
There is a woeful lack of understanding, not only in the black community, but really in the white community, of why black people are in the condition that we're in, and why all of the efforts that whites have made and government has made to try to solve the problem in the way that government sees fit has not really worked. And blacks are still crying out for more and more and more. And I realize that this is an irritant to white people, because you really don't understand. And it's not really your fault. It's not really your fault. You just don't.
I am so sick and tired of this chip that you're carrying on your shoulder. We have bent over.
Check it out. FEMA was originally created, everybody thought, to be a disaster relief agency. It isn't. The real purpose of FEMA was to bring about the new world order in the United States. They are part of a bigger, wider agenda that includes Bill Gates, other billionaires throughout the world, Fauci, Burke, that you see standing beside Donald Trump mostly every day in these last few months, work with Gates, are part of planning this so-called pandemic that is not a true pandemic. It's a live exercise. If you check the internet, you'll find back in March, there was Secretary of State Pompeo on a news conference with President Trump standing right beside him. He slipped and he mentioned that we were in a live exercise pertaining to COVID-19.
We're in a live exercise here to get this right. We're in a live exercise here to get this right.
A live exercise pertaining to COVID-19. Do you know what a live exercise is? It's a military exercise. They never dreamed that the world and the public was going to fall for it to the extent they did. Even Trump, if you listen, whispers over to him, you should have let us know. You should have let us know.
We're in a live exercise here to get this right.
This live exercise is the first stage of a plan that began years ago. Powerful people have been involved to bring this new world government into existence for a long time.
All right, I thought I'd kick off with that. Many of us do recall that Pompeo, I actually saw that in real time myself. Pompeo letting that slip and Trump being like what he was. And that lady, boom, that lady's probably over 60, definitely over 60, probably pushing 70, and she is spot on for what every single person worldwide should know. Verbatim. She wasn't off a step at all, and I'm sure many of you out there would agree with that. So before I get into my big segment here with Economic Forum talk with about Klaus Schwab and a great reset by a good cast here, Charlie Robinson, Jay Dyer, and a dude named, I don't know his name. But anyway, let's listen to somebody talk about. Now, you guys heard the Andrew Tate stuff. Maybe some of you don't know who Andrew Tate is. He was been popular this last year. He's been on InfoWars, so on and so forth, about, you know, masculinity and, you know, just really going against the grain on mainstream narratives and whatnot. But, you know, when people come out of nowhere, they seem to come out of nowhere, even though he's been around with that much popularity and whatnot, you think sometimes that he's actually part of the system. Well, you also know that that system eats their own. But the reason I'm going to play this clip is because the combination of these social media platforms or streaming platforms. We're talking YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, so on and so forth, that all these platforms that many of you may or may not be on, one or more or all, and how these platforms together coordinate efforts to cancel people, ban people, strike people, whatever. Whether or not you did it something against their terms of service, and in some instances, whether or not you're even on their platform. Okay? Like we've heard in the past that people like get canceled. They're getting canceled. Some celebrity or somebody's getting canceled. And they'll be like, get an email from Airbnb saying, oh, we're suspending service for your use. And the person be like, I'm not even a part of Airbnb. Why are they sending me an email telling me that I can no longer use the services when I've never used their services, or Uber, or so on and so forth? So this dude is about to tell a story. He knows, allegedly knows Andrew Tate, and was actually on the phone as all this was happening with Andrew Tate as this was going on. This is Michael Sartain telling a story how there was a coordinated effort to take anything, social media, his platform, his cash flow, including his bank accounts even, all down within minutes of each other. And I've been talking about this since 2016. Because it actually happened to me. I got my account suspended at, I don't know what it was, Twitter. It was either Twitter or Facebook, one of the two. And then the other one, even though I didn't do anything on the other one, talking about what I was talking about, they got me in the same week, even though I didn't do anything on the other one, what I said on the other. You get it? So I had both my accounts, boom, suspended or froze or banned, accusing me of something that I... whatever, they're stupid terms of service. And actually, I was talking about the Russian collusion trials of the time when they were having all those hearings about Donald Trump and Russian collusion, right? Just as I think he was still president-elect when all that was going on. And I was like, you know, I was like, this is such a hoax and whatever. And I was, what's his freaking name from California? But anyway, let me move on. Let's get this story out of the way. And he's probably going to swear because this guy obviously cannot freaking have a conversation without swearing.
Andrew Tate has a situation where people have an issue with something that he's done before. At the time, there was videos coming out of the allegations of human trafficking, and there was this whole situation with him apparently hitting a girl. The girl comes out later and says, this is absolutely what we wanted. This is something we played. I worked in a cam house, and none of this was totally orchestrated. And then also the girl, there's a video.
Twice she did it.
Yeah, there's a girl who comes out and who says she was human trafficked. She comes out, grabs a pizza from the pizza guy, goes back in, and then leaves in an Uber. So that's why they weren't charged with human trafficking at the time. But the problem is he loses his Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, his YouTube account within minutes of each other.
Bank account.
Meaning the executive.
Processing account.
We haven't got to that yet. His point of sales, All of them go away at the same time. He can't even get on Uber.
Okay.
At this point, it is quite obviously a coordinated effort from a bunch of different platforms.
Silicon Valley Mafia.
To take away his accounts all at the same time, and he never violated terms of service on Instagram, but Instagram got rid of his account. My question is, does that not seem a little bit, like collusion?
Criminal organization.
I mean, I do think that the platforms should enforce only their own terms of service.
Thank you.
And that they should pay attention to things as well. My understanding of the Twitter situation, though, was that I think he'd lost an account well before.
I wouldn't even talk about the Twitter situation. Yeah. He did nothing. In fact, he doesn't even have a TikTok. Uh-huh. And he was banned on TikTok. He didn't even have a TikTok, and he was banned on TikTok. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Right.
On platforms where he did not violate terms of service, he was terminated from those platforms. At the same time, his point of sales for all of his different organizations were
taken
away.
That's the shit that's scary.
At the same, seriously, I was talking to Andrew when it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I woke up this morning, and all of my apps, none of them work on my phone, on my personal phone. This is, to me, that seemed a little bit above and beyond. Regardless, even if he was guilty, for them to, a coordinated effort for him to lose all of these accounts at the same time.
So, and I don't know anything about the situation.
Sure.
Or whether that was that could have been a cell phone level blocking or an internet level blocking in Romania. There could have been a whole bunch of different things
We saw his YouTube gone. His Instagram gone, his Facebook gone, and we from the outside looking in, we saw it all disappear
within minutes.
Within minutes of each other, they all went away. Meaning there's phone conversations between executives at these different companies for a broad span, and then a press release was released to the New York Times in order letting them know that all of these platforms were going to suspend him, and in addition lost his bank accounts, and in addition lost his point of sale
processing
for not being even accused of a crime.
Now, by the way, here's the real question, Chris. Are you a top G?
I just try to keep up. I just try to
What color is your Bugatti?
Not my thing.
Do you?
I drive a Tesla X, which
there
I
we go. Was, I'm getting one.
Which I say publicly, and
beautiful.
It's I've been asked to give commentary on the Elon situation repeatedly on CNBC and on Bloomberg and everything. And I
question:
say,
would you do a show like this with Elon?
Sure. All absolutely.
Right. Twitter Spaces, Elon, you heard it.
Yep. I said, look, I was a SpaceX investor. I'm out now.
Okay, so they didn't even really finish up that freaking point. This guy just split off into Tesla. I want a Tesla. That makes it all better. Look, the guy they're actually talking to was the Attorney General of California, and he lost his position to Kamala Harris when Kamala Harris became the Attorney General. So Kamala Harris beat him for his seat. So this guy's a diehard Democrat. What he does today is stuff with sports and whatever, but they're asking him stuff about politics. And he's still a diehard Democrat. You could hear it because if you listen to this whole conversation, which I have, he's a POS. How could you, with all the stuff that Democrats do today, how could you be a regular, normal, decent, moral person and still call yourself a Democrat? I mean, seriously. I mean, I'm not suggesting call yourself a Republican, because personally, I am neither. I definitely would never, ever been a Democrat in my entire freaking life. But I would have identified as a Republican, but not even now, because as we know, we got two wings of the same bird, I mean, it's ridiculous. We can't trust any of them. We have to be on our own. We have to be independent. We have to be nationals and so forth. But that's a whole other story. So we're going to get into this conversation. This is a Sean Atwood panel that he put together. And I think it's a darn good one. He actually got some heavy hitters here. So really deep research of the past and present of these globalists and controllers and so forth. So let's get into it.
So why is Klaus Schwab being spoken about so much at the moment? You absolutely see him everywhere, David.
Because of people like us, Sean. We made the man famous by exposing this agenda, because I don't know if anybody really even paid attention to who Klaus Schwab was until the whole situation unfolded over the last few years, because it was just incident. It was a coincidence, of course. It was just a coincidence that they announced this great reset during the pandemic. And we can say that. Can we say that? We can say that at least. Maybe. maybe we shouldn't risk it. Anyways,
abbreviations are always appreciated.
We're gonna have to resort to hand signals over Zoom now. This is the way we're at. But basically, we have been talking about him, and I think they want us to talk about him. And I don't think they even care about the negative press. I think they're like, any press is good press. They believe that they've got this thing cinched. They've been planning this for decades. It's something that, and I'm glad that Jay pointed out the history of this. This is something that people that are just coming into this now, because there's way more conspiracy theorists now than there ever was, which is great. And it's now, you're not a theorist, by the way. You're a researcher and a, you know, fact collector. But basically, you know, we have done a good job, I think, at least of bringing people a different perspective on it. And our job, I think, is to show people the history of where these people come from, what they've been advocating for. Since, you know, say the Paris Climate Accord, the real summit, all the stuff with the climate gate thing and the climate scam is all weaved into it. The transhumanism, changing of the economy. But as Charlie was mentioning, they're also talking openly now about changing what it means to be a human being. And that is, I think, the biggest concern people should be having with who these people are. And even though we're all excited about technology, it's like, oh, technology is great. And they're showing it to us in the movies, and it's going to fix all the health problems. It's going to extend our lives. It's going to give us so many different new abilities and superpowers, just like the Marvel Avengers. That's what everybody thinks it is. But I think that's just a fancy sales pitch for another system of control where they can do something called bio-digital surveillance, where essentially it's not just about having a couple of cameras up in your local neighborhood. They're literally monitoring your genetics at this point. They're monitoring every movement that you make. If you look at what China's doing right now, that's just the beginning stages of what they want to implement for the world, with a social digital credit system, complete restructuring of the economy, complete restructuring of your government, where essentially you're just a little vassal state in a big global empire. And look what they're doing with the farmers, the land, and everything else. And they're doing it off of the back of these various threats. So the reason Schwab is so popular is because he's kind of like the PR manager. He's the spokesperson. He's the chairman. He was also on one of the committee boards for the B Group. Jay, I'm sure you remember that. He was integrally involved in that back in the day. And I think a lot of people are also forgetting about Prince King Charles, where he's declared something called the Terra Carta, which I did a whole deep dive on, which is what he's calling the new basically mandate for the world to replace the Magna Carta. See, the Magna Carta issued out rights for every human being to have free rights and to not be oppressed by their government. But the Terra Carta is now giving nature rights. And even though I know all the hippies are like, yay, finally the trees in my backyard have rights, we have to talk about the fine print of what that really means for humans, especially when they're openly saying they want to change us into something else. So sorry, I know that's a lot of stuff, but Klaus Schwab is famous because we help make him famous because we're trying to expose what these people are really up to.
Over to you, Charlie.
Well, another reason, and those are all very good reasons why we're talking about him, but another reason why we're talking about him is because we have big problems with his spokespeople. Justin Trudeau, Jacinda Ardern, Emmanuel Macron, Chrystia Freeland, we all these people come out and they start talking about things over the last year and a half, 2 years, and it's inconsistent with logic and reality, and it starts to make you question, why are these people saying these things? And as you start to dig in a little bit as to why, you know, why are they all going with this very unusual agenda, it leads you to one person, and they all come out of the Klaus school. And then of course he's on the record talking about how he's penetrated cabinets and things like that, and so it's not a surprise. So part of the reason why we're talking about Klaus is because he has so many people speaking on behalf of him, you know, for him. And they're out there in high level management positions, making extremely dangerous and important decisions about freedoms, lockdowns, surveillance, who can and cannot come into their countries, and things like that. So when you see the insanity of some of these leaders and the embarrassing behavior of people like Trudeau, it causes you to sort of, you know, think, well, I know he's not saying, he's too dumb to have this thought himself. So who is he getting it from? And of course, it leads back to Klaus. So Klaus has become famous in part because his students have become so unbelievably incompetent.
Okay, Jay.
Yeah, Klaus is famous because they intended, I think, to finally have somebody sort of be the public face of this inner sort of steering committee style of governance, which is the way the world is really run, is that you had about 100 years ago, maybe a little more than that, the British Empire set up what they called steering committees and roundtable groups. And it's a way that they would run the empire or run the superstructure of the global government that they wanted to put in place through sort of an inner group with an outer face. And so Klaus represents the sort of coming out party of that inner party. And he's sort of what I would say is kind of like the go-between the public and the inner party, which is weird because he's not the most palatable kind of person. He's literally a kind of a Bond villain. And I almost wonder if they didn't do that on purpose to have him kind of operate that way. But really the purpose of all this is that, as he himself said, and as David was pointing out, like this new covenant, like if you read when he put out his 2018 book, Shaping the Fourth Industrial Revolution, he described the need for a new moral, a new covenant, a new ethic. And what David was talking about with this this earth ethic is the thing that Klaus was talking about. And they said that the last few years, I mean, Klaus was writing prior to Koof, but when we had the Koof come out, that was, according to him, the vehicle for moving us into the next phase of the Great Reset. So that's what this is all about. And that's why he's so famous, is that he's intended to be the mouthpiece of this inner group.
Okay, David, what is the Fourth Industrial Revolution?
It is, to my knowledge, it is the merging with AI and nanotech and all these new forms of technology. It's the process of bringing about transhumanism, which is, again, the same thing, and building that into some kind of a structure where they can actually make a global central control grid that's going to manage all of that. So it's the Fourth Industrial Revolution all these different phases of revolution. They're looking at this as just, oh, this is just a natural curve of history. You know, we did this revolution of all these different industrial revolutions, and this is the next step for humanity, is to merge with technology to this level. But I think a lot of this was guided. I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with technology, obviously, but if technology should be serving humanity, it shouldn't be setting up a global technocracy that Aldous Huxley warned us about and so many others, where essentially we are slaves to technology, because who gets to manage the AI? Who's programming the algorithms in Silicon Valley? Who gets to have all the access to the control knobs and the switches and the surveillance cameras and the whole system, right? So it's essentially, in my book, it's the end of human freedom. And it's also going to be the end of human thriving, because the people that are involved in this Great Reset and that are buddies with Klaus Schwab are open advocates for reducing the population of humanity, for things like eugenics, even though they'll never use that word, and other things that we've seen in past totalitarian systems, that I think this is just their way of modifying their attempts in the past and bringing it all together. And at some point, I'd love to ask the other guys in the room here, who I know are very good at this stuff, about their thoughts of the financial structure and the political structure that the Great Reset is based upon, where they're calling it something called stakeholder capitalism. And, you know, there's the discussion about, is this new world order going to be communism, socialism, fascism, what's it going to be? And I've got some quotes from people like Carol Quigley and things like that to get into some ideas on it. But anyways, that's kind of my thing, is that this has been guided. We've been guided to this position that we're in. And there are small groups of people who are unelected, unaccountable, that have trillions of dollars invested behind them by these investing firms, that are proposing a very specific kind of a fourth industrial revolution that they've written about openly, just calling it different names, for literally decades, if not centuries. So for them to go around and say, oh, it's just a natural ebb and flow of history, and this is just where we're at in the game of humanity, I don't believe it. I think they guided us here because they want a central control grid that will actually be a combination of all the other central control grids they tried to create in the past.
Over to Charlie. I'm sure you've got lots to add to that, especially the financial side.
Yeah, well, David mentioned that they don't use the term eugenics anymore. You're right. It's been rebranded. It's now called transhumanism, which doesn't sound as bad. But so let's start with this. The first industrial revolution was water and steam. The second industrial revolution was oil, electricity, and steel. The third industrial revolution, which we are in right now, is computers, electronics, and internet. And the fourth industrial revolution, according to them, is physical, biological, and digital. And I will say this is what Klaus said, describing transhumanism. Fusion of technologies that is blurring the lines between the physical, digital, and biological spheres. He said what the fourth industrial revolution will lead to is a fusion of our physical, digital, and biological identities. Now, there's a number of reasons to be concerned about this, but one that jumps out at me that doesn't get talked about a lot, but I promise you it's in the back of their mind, maybe even in the front. And that is that if you think about the genetically modified food industry, you can't patent a tomato, a natural tomato. It comes from nature. You just can't patent it. They don't allow you to. But if you modify that tomato by one deviation, it no longer is a natural tomato. It now is something else. It's a genetically modified organism. It still looks like a tomato for the most part, and it might taste like a tomato, but legally and physically, it is not. And my thoughts on this is that once you become transhuman, you are no longer legally human. And that means that laws don't apply. You can now be owned, sold, traded, exterminated. You're no longer a person legally. You might feel like a person, you might not, but you might look like a person, but you're not anymore, because you have now moved from being a natural human to something else. They have a name for that. I'm sure Jay knows it. But that to me is the trap of the fourth industrial revolution. And for those that say this is conspiracy theory, I assure you it is conspiracy fact. In fact, you can go to weforum.org, their own website, and read about it yourself. They're not hiding it. It's right out in the open. It's only hidden to the extent that the public chooses not to go and search for it, but it's right there on their website. That is their plan.
All right, over to Jay.
Yeah, I remember being in college, and I was first reading about this stuff in grad school, and I brought this up to my professor, and he was like, "Oh, do you believe everything on the internet?" And I'm like, aren't you on the internet? Like, you're on the internet. So he told me I shouldn't believe things on the internet. I'm like, but your university's on the internet, so what, should I not believe you now? I mean, the sort of bullheadedness of the people who deny at this point is sort of, it's like, I don't know if there's any hope for you if you're still denying this stuff at this point. So, yeah, I think that the question of what kind of a system it is that they're putting in, what is this that the Great Reset wants to do economically and in terms of biology. The book I'm lecturing through right now is a Romanian historian who's kind of a good successor to Carol Quigley, and Quigley wrote the books from the establishment's perspective. So he did Tragedy and Hope, which is like a defense of the system that they're bringing in. He also wrote another book called Anglo-American Establishment, which goes deeper into the actual structure of the system that we live in. And so the book that I'm lecturing through now is kind of a successor to that. It's a Romanian historian about the Milner-Fabian conspiracy. And the reason Fabianism is important is because whether it's Klaus or whether it's Kissinger or whether it's David Rockefeller himself, they all were influenced by Fabian socialist ideology, which is like Keynesianism, basically. And so John Maynard Keynes is the British economist who's philosophy went into the creation of the IMF, the World Bank, these entities. And so from Klaus's perspective, he's just following in suit with this same ideology, which is basically the merging of big capitalism, monopoly capitalism, and a form of reformed Marxism, they call it, known as Fabianism. These things go together very well in a synthesis to create what we know of as the NWO or the transhumanist future. And transhumanism was coined by Julian Huxley when he wrote the preamble or the philosophy to UNESCO. And he's part of, he was the brother of Aldous Huxley. And so his philosophy is actually that we need to rebrand and rephrase what eugenics was and turn it into biometrics and transhumanism. So that's just the rebranding that Charlie was talking about. And then you can see a perfect continuity from those guys back in the 30s, 40s, 50s up to today. When you read Klaus's book, the last third of Klaus's book is actually how to put into place Skynet. It's basically Skynet, but not microchips. It's through nanotech. So everything is intended to be rewritten, including the whole biosphere. So I could go more into that, but I'll let other people talk. But yeah, that's what this is all about. And the economics is just one element of this new system they're bringing in, which is to replace everything with a kind of a synthetic overlay. And the economy is what you're hearing about with CBDCs, which is central bank digital currencies that are just an even worse version of fiat and an even more lockdown control style method of economics beyond what we've known with the existing physical cash fiat system. It's the next level of that.
Well, I've got a quick message from Ash. He said that there's so many people in the chat that the questions that we asked for earlier on have scrolled off the top of it. So he's lost them. So if you posted the question when we asked the questions earlier on, can you please repost your question now? And Ash is going to get on the ball and he's going to grab those as they come in. But it is going fast right now. There's almost 1,500 watching live. So huge thank you to everyone who's been watching and sharing this. And I'll just throw a question out there then. So, David, why do they even need us? Aren't we just useless eaters? Couldn't they just do something to eradicate us at some point?
Wow, what a question. Aren't they underway with that process right now? Well, there's a few ways to look at it. In some, it's like they have like a love-hate relationship with us. They clearly need us, or at least some of us. I think they're just at the point where they're like, we got to trim the fat. You know, there's too many. You know, we need to have the – we need to protect nature from these filthy humans. You know, there's too many players on the board. But in another sense, they need us for our productive and creative energy, because I think a lot of these people at the very, very tip top, and I'm talking about some of the primary psychopaths that are behind the curtain that we don't even see, they don't really have any empathy. And when you don't have any empathy, you don't really have much creativity. And so you need to set up these sort of roundtable groups and these collection agencies of talent in a way so that you can pull people into your ranks that have that productive creative energy so that you can bring a sort of genius level to your evil plans in a way. And they need us for that productive energy. They needed us for farming back in the Middle Ages. They needed us to till the land and do all the hard labor. They needed us for mining. They needed us for all these different things. But now with technology, I think their dream, their wet dream is they're like, well, we don't need humans organically anymore. So we're going to now convert that into something that can be more highly controlled and regulated, like what Charlie was pointing out brilliantly there. And by the way, it's an honor to be amongst such educated men fighting this fight. This is amazing. But he was pointing out how essentially I'm losing my train of thought. There's so many things going through my head. The idea here is that they need us they want to merge us with this technology because then they can control society more. So they're thinking we're entering a new phase of being able to manage Earth's resources, and we don't really need as many of these pesky humans anymore. So they need us in one sense, but now they're looking to transition us into a new type of being that can be more highly controlled and even more productive for them. And that means that for us organic, freedom-loving humans, we have to make our stand now and remember and remind the younger generations, what is freedom? What does it mean to be human? Why is it valuable? Why are these people crazy? Why should they be ignored? Where's the lies? Where's the scams? That's what we need to be doing moving forward.
All right, over to Charlie.
Well, let's quote the one of the bigger psychopaths, not bigger in stature, but bigger in mentality. Professor Yuval Noah Harari, top advisor to Klaus Schwab, who says, humans are now hackable animals. The whole idea that humans have this soul or spirit and nobody knows what's happening inside them and they have free will, that's over. So those that make it through will be hacked. those that do not make it through will be eliminated. They don't need as many of us as there are here. You've been to a Walmart before. For God's sakes, you know, I mean, even normal people go through that and they go, there's just too many people here. When you add psychopathy and power and this this sort of philosophy to it, and a lack of a soul and remorse, then you get the World Economic Forum. You get this mentality. And this, unfortunately, I think is it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for people to recognize, because it's so, you know, we come from a place of goodness. We look at this and we think we would never do this to another person. And then we export that and project that onto these people. That's a dangerous thing to do. They don't think like we think. They don't want what we want. The idea that, well, I would never want to get rid of 90% of the human population, therefore it can't be real, it has to be conspiracy theory. Be very careful with that line of thinking. You're right. We shouldn't be, you know, there shouldn't be somebody saying they want to get rid of 90% of the population, but there is. They're everywhere, and they're only hidden. I mean, their books are in public. You can read them. They're not hiding this. They're not going back and saying, oh, I was misquoted in my autobiography. They're not Charles Barkley. You know, they said it, they stand behind it, and they mean it. So this, I think that in the future, if they have it their way, if we're unable to stop this or throw up enough of a roadblock, if it's up to them, they will eliminate a large percentage of the population, and those that are left will be controllable one way or the other, whether they are physically controlled through nanotechnology in that, or they're controlled through social credit scores, universal basic income, smart cities, or whatever, or they're just mentally broken, they will be controlled. So we're at a real pivotal time in humanity where this is not something you can be a spectator to. You have to get involved. You have to understand this. It's not going away unless we make it go away. So I think understanding the agenda behind the World Economic Forum, and in general, Klaus Schwab in particular, is important to everybody. Even if you're not really into this stuff, you need to know what's happening, if for no other reason than to get yourself out of the way of it.
Over to Jay.
Yeah, I mean, I like that Noah Yuval Harari quote, because, you know, one of the things we need to be able to do to not be duped by this is to pick out the basic level contradictions that occur. And one of those is this idea that, okay, so Harari says there's no such thing as consciousness and free will. It doesn't exist. And then the other times he's talking, he's saying, oh, we're going to upload your consciousness to the computer. Your consciousness will be uploaded to the cloud. How are you going to upload something that you just said doesn't exist? Right. And so these are con men. These are people who sell you on something that's not real. What they're trying to sell you on is Malthusianism or a death cult, mass death. So the whole idea is to just get rid of, like we said, like Charlie said, 90% of the people, right? Get rid of 90% of the people when the technology is advanced to the degree that, as Klaus wrote about in Fourth Industrial Revolution, the AI can run things. So that's it. We don't need the humans anymore because we have AI. And humans are kind of like livestock, they're cattle, and we don't need them. So we can get rid of most of them because they're a, you know, problem to the planet. They're hurting Mother Earth, all this kind of stuff. So it's all giant, huge level scams. Once we understand that the people that are running this are like super high level con men, yes, they do have, you know, technology. They do have a lot of money and power, which they print out of thin air, the money that is, right? But it's like, imagine Jeffrey Dahmer or like one of the serial killers that we talked about, Sean, right? Imagine them, but more functioning and more capable, right? The serial killers are kind of couldn't control themselves and they would go on these binges or whatever. But imagine being at that kind of a level, but you can control yourself and you just do it on a more wide scale. That's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with Jeffrey Dahmers who can like manage and do AI and like algorithms, right? That's what we're talking about. So it's that level of psychopathy. But to do it at a functioning level. And I think once you're past the normal kinds of pleasures that most people seek out, you are sort of locked into this mode of just control and power. It's like a whole nother type of drug. And in my view, it's ultimately kind of demonic. I think there's like a spiritual power that motivates a lot of these people, even if they don't know it. And that's how the agenda is basically contiguous over multiple decades and even a couple centuries. You've got the same plan, because it goes back to ultimately you could say Plato's Republic, which is it's the basis for technocracy. Plato said, here's a way to set up a society run actually by a secret society. So in Plato's Republic and then his later writings, it's a society controlled by a secret group, an elite group that intentionally tricks and lies to everyone. It's called the noble lie. And then it's the model for perfect mathematical style government is what Plato called it.
I think Plato also wrote that democracy is the road to tyranny. I think that's what we're on. So we're going over to the viewers' questions, and we've got Damien Barnett. Is anyone working to stop or break up the WEF, David?
Well, I am. I don't know about anybody else. I know there's people all over the world that are working on it. I don't know if there's any like official groups. I mean, you just see these different pockets of resistance. I think there are even good people in our institutions, in our governments, in our, you know, military intelligence, media. We're getting a lot of whistleblowers coming out that are talking about more of the elements of this stuff. So we're seeing more information come out to the general public now in the span of the last couple of years than I've personally ever seen studying any of this, which I find to be really interesting. I don't know if that's just a product of the times or if there's people really working behind the scenes to try to fight back. But I know that, you know, look what we saw in Canada with the truckers. You know, I did a documentary covered the whole thing. That's just a sign of average blue collar, hardworking, everyday people who never protest coming together to try to do something, to try to bring attention. It went on with the mandates, but everybody involved knew that this is really about a much bigger agenda. You had the Dutch farmers resisting in the Netherlands that brought in the Polish and the Italians and all these other groups. You've had the French, you know, kicking back against Macron for some time now. So you see these like little mass movements coming up here and there. And then behind the scenes in the media sphere where we work in the sort of alt media, which is now becoming the dominant media because the mainstream media is an utter embarrassment to themselves and their credibility is imploding at free fall speed into their own footprint as we speak. So we have now become the resistance because only shows like this are going to tell people the details about this without trying to fluff it up and protect these people like all the other mainstream outlets are going to do. So that's the resistance. The person asking that question, I forget your name. It's a great question. You and I are pushing back. We're the ones resisting. Everybody here right now that's listening, that understands what's going on, we are the resistance. Nobody's coming to save us. We are the resistance. And that's why we have to continue, even if you feel like you're outnumbered, your friends and family are putting all this pressure on you. They don't want to believe you. They're stuck in the matrix. Ignore that. Just keep going. Keep speaking the truth. I'm a student of people like Alexander Solzhenitsyn and Viktor Frankl and people who survived tyranny. And they've always said it. You know, it didn't take the masses to overthrow tyranny. It never did. It took small, motivated groups of people that never shut up and never stopped speaking the truth and fought back with every fiber of their being. And by nature's order itself, the lie collapses eventually. The noble lie is shown to not be so noble, and the truth always wins in the end. We're just hoping that there isn't too much collateral damage on the way. So let's do it. I'm in. Let's get some people together. Let's get some of our own groups together to resist this and try to bring back freedom and humanity again to this planet.
Thanks. So Charlie, what hope do us little people have against a $1 trillion apparatus run by psychopaths?
Well, there is some good news, and that is that it appears that they are moving faster than they intended to. They're making a lot of mistakes. Their schedule seems to be off a bit. You don't, you know, with regard to the thing we're not allowed to talk about, you don't incentivize people with donuts and wrap laps around Talladega Speedway if things are going well. Okay, so the messaging of the whole situation we've been locked down under, you know, for the last 2 years, that's been an abject disaster as far as I'm concerned from a management standpoint. They thought that things would go a lot smoother. So we're already starting to see pockets of, you know, things to be optimistic about. The push for central bank digital currencies to me is maybe the hill to die on, because if that is established, And you can sort of thwart the World Economic Forum's plan. You kind of have to, you know, you have to focus on one component of it. You know, if you can, and if you focus on the CBDCs, the central bank programmable digital currencies, then you've got to be really diligent about making sure that that doesn't happen. Because if that does, they have the ability to set your currency to do all sorts of things, like evaporate and turn into dust in your digital bank account because it's set, you know, hey, Sean, the Christmas numbers, the Christmas spending numbers just came in and they were well below what we were expecting here. The White House has announced that because of that, they're going to try and stimulate the economy a little bit more. And they've sent 30% of everybody's CBDCs to expire in the next 90 days. So you better start spending them because they're going to be worthless. That sort of stuff is insane, of course, but possible. With central bank digital currencies, you say the wrong thing on social media, it vanishes. You're only allowed to shop on the company's store, and that might be only the partner groups that work with the World Economic Forum. And there's plenty of them, and you probably have their products, or you buy their cars, or you know, go to their stores right now. But what if you could only spend your universal basic income with those people? You know, so then that's a lot that locks out everybody else, all the mom and pop, the small and medium sized businesses wind up getting destroyed, you know, like what happened in 2020, wink, wink. You know, so this whole thing, if you want to really try and strike at the core of what the World Economic Forum is doing, pick central bank digital currencies, focus on that, make that untenable for them. And you've really thrown a monkey wrench into their whole plans. I feel like they are on an accelerated schedule. It's 2030 is the benchmark. Agenda 2030. We've heard about all of that. They've talked about that. It really feels like 2025 to me. I don't have any particular information that says that it's been reset, but it just feels like they're sort of on a schedule. Like somebody came into the boardroom and said, you're moving too slow. Hurry up. I don't care if you have to give these dummies donuts. Do whatever you have to do, or lottery tickets, but get them in here and get them to get on board with the program. And that has been behind schedule. So I think that there's some optimism. I don't want to give anyone false hope, or I don't want to say that, you know, it's all done. You know, they're never going to be able to accomplish their plan. They're on their way, but it's not over yet. We still have a say in this. And one of the things we have to remember is that if we collectively decide, it doesn't have to be all of us, but a large enough percentage of people decide we will not comply, then it makes things a lot more difficult for them. So we have to remember that our compliance is necessary in this case. And if you have the ability to remove yourself or to just not comply with this, it's almost your duty and obligation to make things harder for these people.
All right, over to Jay then as to how this can be stopped.
Yeah, so there's a lot of hope. I mean, from the vantage point of the last few years, I mean, they've had to really throw out things to try to speed things up because I think the agenda was definitely behind schedule. So that's why we saw what we've seen in the last 3 years was because they want to move things ahead. And it's correct that they usually do these things in 10-year actuary plans. So they have certain plans by 2030, 2040, and 2050. And so when you read somebody like Jacques Attali, another one of these global elite transhumanist people who helps plan this stuff, he says by 2040, you'll have the full rollout of the tech Skynet system throughout the whole world. He calls it the global brain. He says by 2050, we'll have that hopefully population reduction. So you get these decade actuaries that come out from them publicly. And it's like Tucker said on his show covering CBDCs, like if they get that, it's over, because then they can shut down anybody's commerce and you won't be able to buy, you know, your food, right? So this, what's weird about that is that you can go back 100 years ago where Bertrand Russell said they would roll out a system where you get weekly central bank allotted credits. And then if you don't spend them, they go away. That's because they don't want you having capital. You can't attain and accrue savings and capital because that empowers you if you have your own assets and your own capital. That removes you from having any power. And that's the whole purpose of ESGs. That's the whole purpose of BlackRock and all their plan for social, their version of social credit score is to have complete and total control. In fact, the head of the Bank for International Settlements, who Quigley identifies this as the central bank of central banks, it's the Federal Reserve of Federal Reserves. That big triple chin dude came out and said, literally said, we're going to have a CBDC that has a total programmable power by which we can shut down anybody who says anything against what we do. So if you don't recognize this, that it's a 100% total control system, total technocracy, total dystopia, then it's over. But people are recognizing it. And so it's like, you've got somebody like Tucker Carlson, the biggest cable news program in the U.S., which basically just talks to boomers all day long, right? So they're sort of basic. They're just now waking up to like what people in the alt media have been saying for a long time. Is it too late? I don't know. I hope not. But if we can get people like they're just now waking up, which is a good thing, right? So, but we got to go. We have to move quicker on our side because they're already beginning to roll this out. And if we wait another 10 years to wake up to the next phase, then it's going to be too late.
David, what's the role of Elon Musk in all of this? And isn't he on the same page as Klaus Schwab when it comes to chips in the brain?
Well, this is a dicey one. I know this is a lot of contention in the community about this, and good. We need to have these discussions. Nobody knows. Nobody's behind the curtain. But I'm very curious as to why the sudden shift in a lot of things that he's been doing. And so regardless of ultimately whose side he's on, maybe he's just on his own side. I don't know. But he has made way on Twitter for a much more free speech platform than before. It's not perfect, but you know, he's only just been taken over in a recent period of time. He's reinstalling a lot of the doctors that got censored over the past while, a lot of accounts.
All right, we'll stop it there. So you can catch that Sean Atwood's channel on YouTube. He's probably on Rumble and other places. I hope you enjoyed that. That actually goes on for 2 hours. Hope you guys are all doing well, in good shape, keeping your head on a swivel, situational awareness, you know, all that stuff we talk about here. And just keep one foot in front of the other and be prepared for anything because, like they just said, acceleration. They're accelerating and they make mistakes. And people, not just them, they're not going to get harmed. We're going to get harmed. So, you know, keep your eye on the ball. You guys all take care. Stand by for Brooks Agnew. Bill Johnson and then the High Council after that. You guys all take care. We'll see you on the flip side.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest.